Welcome to the Social Shift Podcast. My name is Andrew Rurick, and I'm your host. Today, we're talking to Georgie Smith, the founder of A Sense of Home. This organization provides furnishings to young people who have aged out of the foster care system in an effort to break the cycle of homelessness in Southern California and beyond. Let's get to the conversation.
Right, so A Sense of Home began as a complete and total random act of kindness. It wasn't an idea. It was, I think you could say, love in action. What happened was, I was volunteering for a nonprofit, and a young man who'd aged out of foster care, who was associated with that nonprofit, saw a social media post of mine and reached out and said, "Can you help me?" And I had no idea what that meant. So I responded in the message and said, "Sure, how can I help?" And he said, "Could you come into my apartment? I have my first ever apartment, my first ever shot at having a home, and here's the address." And I was like, okay. So I went down there in Long Beach, in the inner city of Long Beach, and he was living on the floor. There was no fridge, not a pot and pan, not nothing to exist off of. Like, there was no table to study off of, no bed, not a shower curtain to protect the shower. He simply had his belongings in black garbage bags. And what I thought I sort of understood what aging out was, but at that moment I realized I didn't at all understand it. For those listening, aging out is when you're in the foster care system and you're never adopted, you emancipate, you were a ward of the state, and then you no longer are. And there are facilities like transitional homes, sort of like a halfway house, where you can go, but then you're on your own. So for this young man, he got himself a Section 8 apartment, which means the government is subsidizing a portion of his rent, but not all of it. He's paying his utilities, working two jobs and studying. But he has no family for the hand-me-down furniture that we all need. Like, that's where I got my furniture from. So I saw him in this situation, and I just did what I would do for my nephew or my neighbor. I said to all my friends on social media who has items that they no longer need that would love to give to this man, and I just posted a photo of he and I. So within a day, we had everything he needed, from the fridge to the sofa, everything. Lights, there was no lights in the apartment. And then I asked for friends to come and help me collect, like who has a truck, and we went around and we collected all of the items, and together, in a day, created his home. And he was completely transformed, like shockingly transformed. And I had this profound sort of epiphany of like that thing that I had taken for granted, a sense of home, had always been afforded to me through family love. And immediately upon doing his home, his friends said, "How did you make this happen? Like, I've seen your photos on social media. What is this new program that I don't know about?" So all of his friends started asking me for help. So I just continued doing it, not thinking that there was a nonprofit happening. It was just a repeating of random act of kindness, and I guess I thought maybe it would come to an end, or I would find another nonprofit to take this on. And I didn't. It just continued. So that was about almost 6 years ago, and we've created over 550 homes now, which has impacted 1,500 young people. And so I just saw an opportunity that we have too much stuff, that we can share it, it can go to where it's most needed. And then because of that initial thing of like, I thought I could convince others to do it, for them it seemed too hard. So as I've been going along, I've been thinking, how do I make this the most efficient way I can so others do take it on? Because this is needed for all foster youth, and it's needed for a lot of people around the world. So I developed our systems into proprietary software and an app so that we can scale this to wherever it's needed.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's it, we're done. No, just kidding. talk to me a little bit about the foster care system and the concept of aging out, and kind of, I guess, how did you get involved maybe even a little bit more background of how did you get involved with the foster care system paying attention to?
Right. I was paying attention to it because my spouse and I were looking at adopting, and we'd done the traditional adopting and got all this training and got certified. And then I asked about, well, what about those kids that are taken away from their parents? What is that? And they were like, oh, that's foster care. You don't want to go near that. It's too complicated. So I wanted to understand what complicated meant. So for me, I just reached out to folks that were working in the space to get educated, which led to volunteering in the space, which then led to this young man reaching out to me and then never adopting because this completely took over my life. Yeah, that's it. And so the actual foster care system, so for kids aging out, it's believed that they make up 50% of the homeless population. So what I noticed in that young man is that he would have, and he was already sleeping on sofas of friends, whether they were, he was going back to the transitional home or he was, he didn't have a vehicle, but often young people in that situation would sleep in their vehicle or go and find people that they could couch surf with, even though they have their own space, because just not the ability to sleep on anything or to sit at anything to eat a meal, there's no dignity in that. So then what I found was in Europe that they had a decline in most countries in Europe, there was a decline in homelessness, and they attributed it to when they were placing homeless families into apartment buildings, like government provided apartment buildings. If they were empty and not furnished, they would go into homelessness. If they were furnished, they would stay. So I saw this as a form of homeless prevention. And as you know, in Southern California, there is an epic crisis of homelessness. And what I then learned is it's very hard to break that cycle of homelessness. So if you think about the area that you live in, I don't know if you've ever sort of moved within the Southern California area. I have. I would shop and go to doctors and to all of my service providers in the original area that I was living in. I wouldn't develop those relationships in my new area. It would take a long time. So those habits are very hard to break. So you develop as a homeless person habits of how to survive and live and a community. And then when you take someone out of that and put them into an apartment, you think, oh, that's great. And why do they go back out to homelessness? Is because that's where their community is. So it's very hard to break that once it begins. And no one's really cracked that nut of solving homelessness. So I thought, well, we could solve it by preventing it, given that aged out foster youth were at least 50% of the homeless population. I thought that we could do that. And it was really simple by sharing what we have too much of and volunteers coming to install the home, to install the furniture to make it a home. And then in addition to that is a loving act of strangers, how transforming that is to be seen and to be heard when you felt very invisible, when you haven't felt worthy of love. For all of these people to show up and do this really big act is life-changing, not just because you have the furniture, but because it gives you hope in the world for the first time. And so on many levels, I saw this as a great solution, and it's really great community building, and it's also healing, very healing for the volunteers. They too are transformed. So I wanted to make this as efficient as possible so we could get this everywhere.
Scale it up and take it to other communities outside the Southern California area. And
yeah, it's needed, and it's not just needed for foster youth, it's needed for anyone that loses their home after an epic event, of whether it's weather or trauma of some kind, domestic violence. In addition, it's the creation of the home is the vehicle by which you can become connected to community and to receive love from community when you need it most.
I know that you had kind of mentioned that you took some of the ideas that you had seen that were effective in Europe in terms of homelessness prevention, and you used that as the baseline model for what you're doing with A Sense of Home. But What are some of the things that we can do personally to address or to help end that in our local communities? And then what are some things and ways that we can get involved to affect systemic change and to bring about an end to homelessness?
I think you got to look at the root causes. Like, I'm sure that you didn't know that a lot of foster youth were homeless, right? So it's going back to that. It's like, once people start to address homelessness, it's like a little bit too late. There has been immense trauma and crisis. So trauma being one of them, you know, it's foster youth have a higher rate of PTSD than vets do. So, and that's if the, you know, the young person's been tested. It's at least a quarter of them have post-traumatic stress. And so it's like, what portions of our population are experiencing immense trauma? And how can you intervene at that juncture? And how can we create different entities within our communities, like what we're doing, which is a volunteer corps that can intervene and provide support? And, you know, it's like, you know, for right now, we on our website, for example, have so many ways that people can get involved with what we're doing. It's ascenseofhome.org, and there is actually, given where most of us are confined to our homes right now, there is activities that you can do from home, and you can donate food, you can do cooking videos, you can prepare kits that would go into homes, you can donate furniture, you can create art. There's so many ways that you can get involved through our organization. But in terms of like, well, how can I, you know, create another version, say, of a sense of home? I think that what is interesting is if you see a problem and then you think you have a solution, act upon it. Like, it began this by saying, what was the idea? I didn't have an idea. I just took action. And then I saw, you know, the more you go into it, the more you understand something and you become better educated. And I honestly felt very much like a fish out of water to begin with, because one, I had no training in foster care. Usually someone that has an MSW, they have PhDs. I hadn't set up a non-profit. I felt very much like the new kid on the block, and a lot of the nonprofits really weren't thrilled to see me because a lot of their board members were saying, well, why does a sense of home need to exist? Why aren't you doing it? I was a bit of an embarrassment to other nonprofits really sort of shining a light on this. So they made it very difficult to me, to be honest, when I came into this space, and I had no background in this area. So I think the message I would say is that if you are coming from a really authentic, genuine place, and you want to genuinely help, not to receive anything, not to get any notoriety, just to give, just to act upon love, you know, the agape love, the selfless love for a stranger. And if you believe you can see and help, you know, you probably can, and you probably can figure something out. I mean, I would never have expected myself to be in this situation and to think that I can contribute and to enable others to contribute. I think that's the thing, is like, we want to. What I discovered was that what was actually my greatest fear when I first posted on social media, like, what if my friends don't have anything, if they don't respond and they don't care about him and they don't want to donate? I'm going to have a really difficult time because I haven't tested my friends in this way before. Like, what if they're not good human beings? Like, I mean, I know they're good human beings to me, but like, I mean, that deck, like, to consider that, like, I got really scared. And then they all gave. And then I posted again, you know, because the young people kept coming to me saying, can I have your help? So I posted again and again, and I was just like, okay, oh, now I'm going to get let down. They're really tired of me now. People kept coming, strangers kept coming and coming, coming, coming. So the great news is people genuinely, truly care. And I do feel that people is a lot, a inherently great and beautiful people, and we don't see enough of that. And to create that space for humanity to shine within your community is as beneficial to the community as actually resolving a problem. You know, that solution you're focused on, if you can bring it's in the how, you know, if you can do it with love and everyone can revealed their best of humanity within that act, then everyone wins. And that I do believe there is this dormant part of ourselves, which is our humanity, that is bursting at the seams to come out and to be activated and to be ignited, and we want to share it, but we just don't have that space to share it. And it's like a muscle that isn't being used. And so when we enter what we call a home creation, we have a little ceremony at the beginning, just introducing one another. And often, you know, incredibly famous people who are paid to go and do anything they want to do, who are coming and, you know, giving up their time to do this, say, this is where I feel most myself, who I truly am. And I think that that's who we truly are, is we are supposed to be in service of others, I believe. And so if you are out there and you have a thought about how to focus on a solution, you know how to solve it, or you feel like there is a model that you can use, or you might have an answer to something, go out and do it. And then you will see that others will come with you and that they will enable you and empower you to make that possible, and therefore make it possible for others to participate and therefore those to be impacted and their lives changed.
Two kind of interrelated questions. You'd mentioned that when you first started this, you kind of felt like the new kid on the block or a bit of a fish out of water. What are some of the ways that you were able to either educate yourself or to learn to get through that or past that? Or do you still kind of feel a bit like a fish out of water? And second question, have you ever found yourself worried that you're going to hit the wall of the amount of empathy that people are willing to give to people?
So the second half of your question, no. So I discovered that, thank goodness. That was a genuine concern of mine, that I thought that they didn't care, but I feel that, I know it, I've witnessed it, I've experienced it, they do care. It's just sharing the story and giving people a space to show up. And it's just connecting some dots and making it easy for people to show up. Not making it complicated. Just, you know, we do a home creation in 90 minutes. You know, we have a warehouse in Hawthorne where people can participate. It's easy. So that's, you know, easy entry point is important. And then people will shine. I've seen it. And that's why I have hope and optimism. The first half of your question, I love to learn. So I just reached out to people that I perceive to be experts, who then in turn shared or connected me to others. And I think that they did that because my questions were serious, and they could see that I wanted to learn. And I think people, again, it goes back to people's generosity. If you're coming from an authentic and genuine place and you're serious and you're earnest in your attempts, then people will share their knowledge as well. And so I did a lot of listening and learning. And also I mostly did that with the young people we were serving. I listened mostly to them, because they were the experts in what's best for them. And perhaps that was maybe what made us a little bit different as well, because I didn't have my PhD, and usually people do, and they approach like, I know what's best for you. A lot of the feedback I'd been receiving from the youth, that they felt like they were a number and someone had an algorithm on how to fix them. And they didn't feel, you know, that was a dehumanizing process. Mm. And so listening, I think listening is the greatest thing we can do, isn't it?
You've tried to make it easy and accessible for people to participate. And maybe that has been one of the key reasons that people have been able to gravitate towards you guys and get involved. Have you seen, I guess, accessibility be an issue when it comes to people getting involved? As in, if there's too high of a barrier to get involved, or if it's too complicated to get involved, do you see that as almost working against...
I possibly not. Look, I find that also one of the challenges, why did I need to create an app and scale this, is because people would, if I did like a national interview, like on the Steve Harvey show or something, our website crashed every time it aired in every region it was airing in. I think it was like, you know, not just the first time, but when it repeated as well. And it was because people wanted to open up a sense of home in their community and they had no connection to foster youth. So it wasn't the foster youth around the country saying, we need this. I mean, some were, but it was majority were saying, we should do this in our community. This is a good thing. So I feel that, like, as much as this is needed for recipients, it's needed but for community to create that space to show up. I don't think that there is any lack of empathy or desire to help to create change. We have made it easy, but I feel like I'm constantly trying to make it easier because we don't have enough space for volunteers, honestly. There's just such a great desire to contribute and to participate. So maybe it's also tell the story. And I mean, it's not like we have millions of followers on social media, but if you just tell the story clearly and with honesty, people will come.
That resonates with me. That's my day job. You know, that's how we got connected, as I reached out because I'm a filmmaker, documentarian, and, you know, story is the thing that changes people. And hearing stories, I'm sure, of, you know, the kids whose lives have been impacted just gets people fired up, and they want to participate and they want to jump on board because being a part of those stories is really powerful.
Yeah. And I think that with us, it's home, and everyone really does connect with home on a very visceral level in a way that we actually haven't fully explored as a society, the well-being that springs from home. Like, everything comes from home, and we sort of talk about it from a design and architectural perspective, but psychologically and from an emotional well-being perspective, it's really, I believe, under-discussed. So I think that people are also reacting to what we do because they know if not for their home, they wouldn't be able to achieve what they've been able to achieve to afford the time to come help us. So I think whether that's as from childhood or whether it's what's been manifested in adulthood or a combination of both, think these things that you take for granted, and to afford that to somebody else that's never had a family or, you know, a loving community, it's really quite easy to just come with open arms, I think.
Walk me through kind of the nuts and bolts of the home creation process. So how does somebody get, mm-hmm. how would somebody get their name on your radar as a potential candidate? And then how does that process work once they're sort of right. in your system?
Yeah, so we have other agencies that, like I mentioned earlier, that a foster youth might go to a transitional facility, or there might be a social worker or a lawyer associated with them, and they refer the youth to a sense of home, and there's an online application, a phone interview, and we try and do a Zoom interview as well. And they must be studying or working. So we're also an incentivized program, and they must have been obviously in the foster care system to receive a sense of home. And then it's very simple. It's for them as well, very simple to apply, very easy, and we're very fast. So typically we would arrive at their home as soon as they have an apartment, as soon as they have keys. Often they've been in there for a long time and they've been living on the floor by the time they've discovered us, or they might be that day. They've got the keys, and we arrive with the truck full, like a full 15-foot truck, full of everything needed to make that a home. And we have a team of volunteers that are there, and within 90 minutes, we've unloaded the truck and we create the home, and everything is color-coded per room. So you take something off the truck, it's got blue on it, and you see blue tape on the living room wall, and go, oh, this is the living room, plonk. So the unloading of the truck only takes 10 minutes. And then the creation of the home is the rest of the time, and really the ceremony and the celebration, all in 90 minutes. So we can't do that during COVID, obviously, being inside with that many number of people. So we have fewer volunteers, and they come to our warehouse, and they pull from our warehouse and completely stage the home. And then the recipient comes in and sees their new home, and oddly enough, it's as powerful as when they're seeing it in their own home. And then we load it into the truck, and they then are empowered to install it per that design in their own home. So that's how we're managing during COVID, and it's been fantastic, and I'm so glad that we've been able to continue to do what we've been doing because it's so desperately needed.
Totally. Especially, you know, I know right now we are kind of at a weird precipice where some of the unemployment benefits are about to run out if they don't get renewed. And, you know, that's going to get real difficult for families that are having a tough time paying the rent, and the eviction moratoriums are about to expire. And so this is about to get real precarious for, I'm sure, millions of people across the country.
Right. We're going to face unprecedented homelessness in this country. And so that's why we've been beta testing our app internally so that we can get this ready to share with other nonprofits that are, no matter what space they're in, we'll give them this software and our guidelines so they can implement our model to service all of those who are coming out of homelessness from COVID. So they're going to be displaced. They're going to lose everything. Once they get rehoused, the community can come in and create everything for them, because the number one landfill is home goods, furniture and home goods. There is enough out there and enough businesses have damaged stock. And it's just about bringing it all together in a really simple, seamless model and getting it to where it's needed most. So yeah, you're right. Things are going to get really, really bad. It's going to be bad for many years. And so we're ready to take this on and not only service those that are displaced, but really help community heal, because people need to feel valued and be of service right now more than ever.
What's a piece of advice that you'd give to friends, family, or anyone who's listening about small but meaningful changes they could make that could make a difference?
I think just kindness is everything. And that just if you think about being thoughtful and kind to every single person that you come across, the mailman that you might not acknowledge is walking by, big smile and thank you. And everyone you come across every day, just ask them how they're doing and look at them in the eye and see them. It does make a huge difference. And for those that you might encounter in your daily rhythms, to really acknowledge them and what you wouldn't be able to do without them. I mean, that's what a lot of our volunteers come away and say that they feel changed by, is that they just, there were people that they weren't acknowledging, whether it was a receptionist at work, that they just relied on her to be positive and optimistic and never went and said, gosh, you know, that optimism keeps me going every day. Like, just telling someone why they matter, whether it's their smile, whether it's the work that they do, whatever it is, kindness, and it's contagious. It truly is. It goes a really long way. And I really feel that love and kindness and humanity is how we can forge our way out of this. Because if we're coming from that space, no matter what the algorithm is or the solution is, if you're not implementing it with love and kindness and humanity, the impact isn't as strong as it could be. And everyone has that capacity within them.
What do you see as the future of A Sense of Home?
I see it as being all over the world. So I see it as chapters doing what we're doing, but I also see it being our model being implemented by the likes of Habitat for Humanity, by shelter, you know, those that are running shelters and transitioning clients into homes, even governments using it after a hurricane or a flood, or businesses can use it. You know, the Home Depot could use it in the Southwest. You know, it's just really simple. I mean, it's just such a simple concept, but it's so needed everywhere. And we've figured out how to do it really easily.
You've got this almost proprietary process in this app that you're developing, but rather than keeping it and sitting on it, you know, you guys are opening it up and giving people access to it. And what's the logic behind that? What's the thinking behind making this open source and allowing people access to it?
Because it's needed. It's literally needed everywhere. And it's even in communities, for example, where there's absolutely no foster youth, not one foster youth in a community. They're like, people saying, we need it here. And not because they know of anyone to help. It's just because it would, should anyone need it, it's a way for that community to be activated, a little bit like a barn raising. And yeah, it's the least we can do. It's needed.
Are there one or two stories that, as you think over the last 6 years and the 550 projects that you guys have undertaken, that pop out that really kind of encapsulate the heart of what you were trying to accomplish with A Sense of Home?
I think that like every single last person we've created a home for is, you know, when I'm asked this question, I think of them, because every single situation is different. And just because someone came from, say, foster care, everyone's situation is different. And I'm very surprised. I feel like when they tell me their story, I just think I wouldn't have been able to do that. I wouldn't have been able to endure that. And so I think about Jasmine, who we just did a home creation for, and she lived most of her childhood in the trunk of a car. And Jeez. She ended up in the hospital and because she was abused and as a like an 8-year-old and no family visit for 4 months. And so that's when, you know, an institution caught on that something's wrong and that child should not be with her family. And ultimately that led to being in foster care, which wasn't, it led to more abuse, unfortunately, and neglect. But those nurses inspired her. So she climbed her way out of poverty and abuse and has a young child and she's working at a hospital and she's studying to become a registered nurse and she is just full of joy and hope and just the most beautiful girl. Just you would see her and you just think, just, I mean, just this stunning, just radiating hope and beauty. And so the testament to the human spirit and again, that those nurses who gave her that kindness is what's shaped her. The kindness, goodness can shape someone in the, you know, into having ongoing meaningful impact in the world, you know, no matter what they've overcome, because, you know, hurt people hurt other people, right? So she could have become that. But the impact of those nurses, the kindness, is what got her through and inspires her to this day, to this day. I think that's, yeah, the testament of kindness and the testament of the human spirit.
What are you hopeful about?
Humanity. I really do believe that it's yet to be fully unleashed and there is far more goodness than there is the other, and we see too much of the other. We're saturated with it, and I know that that other, that darkness, is what leads us to have to do the work we do. But those that are showing up in droves far outweigh the numbers of those that we are having to serve, right? So I believe in humanity.
To learn more about A Sense of Home and to find ways to get involved, visit their website at asenseofhome.org. The Social Shift Podcast is a production of Third Shift Creative. Find us online at our website, thirdshiftcreative.com, or start a conversation and send us an email to hello@thirdshiftcreative.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Social Shift Podcast, and we will see you next time.